I open up my wallet, and it's full of blood.
To miss part two of that song. I apologize. Poor time management, I guess. I've run out of time. It is now, coming up in about a minute, we'll have Music for Human Beings take over. But before we do that, I would like to say, if you're an MIT student, head over to the Thirstier tonight at 9 o'clock. We will have live music there from 9 until about 11. Tonight's artist is Artie K. He plays a upright bass, does some singing, has a background band. Should be a good time. 9 to 11 o'clock. If you want any more information on that, reach us at 617-253-8810. As always, I appreciate your listenership. It means a lot to me. And I'll be back next week, same time, playing you sad music. Sorry to send you out into the weekend this way, but like I said, my time is up. marhaban. Yes, 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 yes. Marhaban. Marhaban bikum fi music for human. I am a doctor, Jalis Sakran, and I welcome you. How the trees are shivering, but not with cold. They are shivering with delight to be with you, as I am. I'm sitting here facing Professor Levine, Mystic Jew. Welcome, Professor.
Thank you for having me once again.
Professor, it is we who are shivering in delight to commune.
Indeed, my pleasure in joining you and all our listeners once again is quite profound and deep and shiver-inducing.
It induces shivers in both the inducer and the induced.
And the good kind of shivers, not the bad kind.
It is so important, I think, to feel sometimes that indeed no shiver should go unappreciated. There are moments when we shiver, and indeed we may regard it as a bad shiver, but objectively, really, is it not also a good shiver?
Well, of course, some of the famous 19th century thinkers believed that the experience of terror and fear was one of the most sublime experiences that any human being can ever have, because it really focuses your mind on what is, which is fear and terror. And so sometimes a little shiver, a little appreciation of the majesty and power of the world and our relative insignificance can really open up a sort of beauty.
To bring your focus and delight in the current moment to a sharp point.
Indeed.
Well, as always, it is so pointedly wonderful to have you here, Professor Levine. We also, I believe, have, beyond several layers of glass and technology, Aurora, voice specialist. Aurora, welcome.
Namaste.
Marhaban, Aurora.
Thank you so much for having me on the air yet again, and beyond the glass as well, which is a unique experience.
And yet, which also causes one to shiver.
Yes, indeed. To shiver, not just physically, but mentally.
A mental shiver?
Yes. There is a lack of the human contact, the personal contact that I'm used to week after week. And I feel somewhat isolated.
Well, I wonder if you could choose to either only touch other humans or only hear them, which would you choose?
That is always such a tough question, but for me, there is so much to be understood from how a person sounds, from their stutters, from their halts, their pauses, from the tone of their voices, the choice of their words.
So much is communicated also visually, however.
Well, that's definitely true.
I've found that sometimes quick punch to the face can communicate very effectively, even without any words.
And yet, one can hear such a phenomenon as well.
I mean, that punch to the face that you describe, of course, Professor, can, depending on the person, indicate many things. One might be, obviously, I dislike you and wish to destroy you. But also, to the appropriate audience, it may mean we are close enough together that I may strike you in the face without fear that I will damage our relation.
Right, and of course, the the logical extension of that would even be murdering a friend with the knowledge that this act of murdering will not affect the friendship. The friendship will live on after life is over.
Precisely, precisely. And that one spirit may massacre another. But I think it is difficult. I think rarely are two souls so friendly.
Bless you.
Well, thank you. I always find that a demon may be there, just behind the hair.
You know, getting back to this punching in the face question, watching nature as I am wont to do, I often will fly out to the savannah and observe the various wild animals there for months. I noticed that young males in the wild like to play fight. Across all mammalian species, I've noticed this phenomenon of males play fighting, and I think humans do it too. Young boys are known to wrestle each other. And I wonder if this is something that is, it's a combination of playfulness, but also competitiveness and training for future real fights. And I wonder how much of it is bred into our DNA, how much of it is contained in our genetic material. And I note that today is actually DNA Day.
DNA Day.
DNA Day, yes.
This is the first that I have heard of. Is it particularly the date or the... And, you know, some of these days are the 25th of December or the first Monday in September.
Well, I believe this one is the date. And so what I've personally been trying to do to observe this holiday is to act in full accordance with my DNA today. So normally when I act, and I think most people act, there's some combination of nature and nurture. Their actions are influenced both by their environment and their determined biology. But today I've acted solely on the basis of biology.
And how have you discovered which parts of yourself are actually encoded and which parts have been created from thin air?
Mostly through meditation.
Now, of course, Professor Levine, is it not also the case that much of our evolved behavior, you know, is evolved by mechanisms other than genetic ones?
I mean cultural patterns.
That are also inherited by, for example, I very, very specifically can think of a small collection of spiritual parents that have injected various behaviors and beliefs in me that I carry and then myself have injected into
others. Who would these be, these spiritual
there
parents?
There are a number of spiritual guides, and there was...
Mahatma Gandhi, Michael Jackson.
There was the very famous guru, Mojori Singh, who had a great deal of influence on me. Mojori Singh, and also Arthur Rainbowbeam, who is a more recent example, but also one who I feel influenced me spiritually very, very deeply. And, you know, I carry these thoughts, that attitudes and behaviors that I also spread to others. And it's interesting to me to think of these things for a moment as bits of material, because they are intangible, although we rarely handle our own, you know, genetic material. But to think about it and to behave about it the same way that one would behave about genetic material, and it is unusual, because so many members of society are engaged in the study of genetic material, and very few, I think, on this other, I'm not sure what a good name for it would be, but ideas evolve the same way.
Wouldn't it be amazing if one could have their cultural and spiritual DNA sequenced in the same way one can have their biological DNA sequenced?
I'm not sure what that would look like. Aurora?
Well, I am thinking about this subject. It's different because when you think about it, there are so many people out there who are saying that what we are is composed of a sequence of letters, one after the other. Thousands and millions and billions of letters in a line. And those letters are with us from birth. But I do not think that that dictates who we are. That may be a beginning point, a point for us to branch out from, for us to overcome.
There are some things also which somehow strike one as being very imprecise. I remember having a long discussion. There was a sequence of debates about when life began. Is it at birth or at conception or at some stage in
puberty?
I believe it was approximately 3.5 billion years ago.
And that is one of the most clean answers to the question, because it is so imprecise, and yet, you know, when you state it in this way, that life is a continuous process that self-propagates and that we are all part of the same life that began many, many years ago, this strikes me as being very, very precisely correct. And likewise, when one thinks of being made up of a sequence of characters, we know this is incorrect. We know that there are creatures that, first of all, we all immediately acknowledge and qualify these statements by saying that we are affected profoundly by the life that we have. But moreover, that there are people that have more genes, they have more DNA, there are chimera and mosaic people.
And myself, I think I'm a bit of a biological anomaly. I did once, many years ago, have my DNA sequenced. And what was puzzling to the medical professionals who performed the sequencing was that instead of having the standard sequence of GTCA amino acids, my genes were actually composed of XYZ and the number 1. So different letters and a number mixed in.
That is very unusual, but knowing you, it's not that surprising.
And of course, it doesn't necessarily have any difference, because the coding scheme is just different, but the meaning might be the same.
Well, it's much like a variable name, as I understand. I mean, they're not simply sequences of letters hiding within your body. They all represent different soul elements and different... it's like there are four nucleotide bases, or whatever they're called, A, T, G, and C. Those represent fire, wind, earth, and water, but we still have not discovered which pairs with which.
Yes, and after that initial experience of having my DNA sequenced a little bit, that was, of course, only a little snippet, I started to meditate, and I realized that if I meditated very deeply, I could bring forth a mental image of a double helix floating in my head in space. And then I focused on it with a magnifying glass in my dream, and I noticed that I could observe these XYZ1 characters. And I woke up from the dream, from the meditation, and I wrote down what I had experienced, and it turns out that it was exactly what had been sequenced by the scientists. And I realized that by meditating, I could actually observe my own DNA without any medical procedure involved.
The ultimate introspection.
That's right. And over the years, every night I would meditate and dream about some double helices. And I wrote down every morning those sequences which I observed, and eventually I collected a very large sequence of my own DNA just from dreaming and meditating.
And then I think actually I was hasty in calling this ultimate introspection, because I believe that it is penultimate, and ultimate introspection would be regarding it, understanding it, and being able to modify it the way that one modifies one's behaviors based, again, on intro and retrospection.
Yes, I was just about to say it would only be true introspection if If you could read the code and understand it.
Hmm. Did you gather any understanding from it, Professor Levine, or was it simply a sequence?
Well, no, I did. I mean, I understood from some of these sequences that my destiny had been to be a homeless drunkard.
You could read your destiny in the characters.
In the characters, yes. They again, in some meditation and dream, they assembled together and showed me that my genetic destiny had been to lie in the gutter, drunk every night. And yet, somehow, this did not occur.
So the destiny does not, in fact, lie there, perhaps, or can it be altered?
Perhaps it can be altered. Perhaps it's some alternate version of what my life is. Or perhaps it's a true version of what my life is, metaphorically.
It is a really very, very interesting topic. And I must say that when I first really became interested in biology and genetics, and I came across, when I came, of course, to America the first time and really began to be exposed to industrialization, which had not at the time progressed far in my native land, I was repelled by a lot of it. But recently I found that much of the most interesting genetic research is being done there, which is unusual because in my experience it has always been done for profit. And it is nice to see something altruistic coming out of the great machine, something purely for the benefit of others.
Yeah, and I wonder if perhaps any of our listeners would like to share some insights about their own DNA or destiny and whether they've been able to overcome these characteristics that they were born with through their DNA. And if they would like to share with us, and we welcome that, the call-in number is 617-253-8810.
And this is another thing that is in all of our DNA. It is there. It is simply waiting to be answered. Caller, marhaban. Caller, are you there?
Yes.
Welcome, caller.
Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for being with us.
I'm very interested in this talk about representation of reality. Seems to come through a lot with the discussion of DNA. And I, you know, as a person who comes from a mathematical perspective, I wanted to weigh in. Of course, we're all familiar with the work of Norbert Wiener, very prolific mathematician who invented the field of cybernetics.
As a person who was exposed, albeit briefly, to German first, I certainly prefer the German rendering.
Oh, yeah, indeed. Well, Wiener, you know, he
which is Wiener Schnitzel.
Oh, Wiener, right. Wiener. I should watch myself.
Norbert Wiener.
So Norbert Wiener, of course, you know, he proposed a rather simple model of Brownian motion, which there's a model and then the actual process. And, you know, at times I wonder, you know, which one is it? Because at times I find that, you know, my own Wiener process is confused with Brownian motion.
Well, caller, I must admit that I'm not familiar with this Wiener person or Brownian motion in general, but is there a particular aspect of yourself that you wish to understand the motion of?
Yeah, I think it's more or less a daily, you know, gathering of self and trying to understand, you know, if it really is the process or if it is.
So just to be clear here, we are talking about the motion of the ocean.
Yeah, and pretty much everything else in the universe.
Well, let's bring another voice in to discuss the motion. Caller 2, marhaban. Caller?
Marhamad, Dr. Jalil.
Marhaban.
I want to add something, and since the other caller is talking about scientific point of view of what you are talking about DNA, I have a question for you.
Please, caller.
Thanks. What's your input if we think from religious point of view? Like...
A religious point of view on genetics?
Genetic. For example, if we take Adam and Eve and look at their DNA, and assuming that what we learn from religion, that they are not a creation of an egg and sperm, how you think their DNA will look like?
Well,
and also, if we think about, since he's from a mother, and we don't know whether he's from an egg or not, it depends on which which religion we take into consideration.
Well, caller, I'm not sure that, you know, I'm not a religious philosopher by any means, but I'm not sure that the idea that Adam and Eve were conceived the same way that we were conceived is necessarily at odds with the many contemporary religious philosophies. Is that the case? I'm not sure. Professor Levine,
well,
perhaps?
We do know that there was, in the Bible itself, it states that man, Adam, was created from dust, and God blew the spirit of life into him via his nostrils.
If this was taken to be a metaphor.
And then Eve, of course, was created from his rib.
But again, if this were taken to be metaphorical, all, meaning that all of the earth was created from dust, that is to say, from unliving material, and that God or some supreme being set out, added energy or arranged things in such a way that Adam would be created, it would not be it would be consistent with the statement that you had made. So I think still the creation story can be made consistent.
Well, there is scientifically as well this proposed mitochondrial Eve, and this is apparently a single woman who gave birth to all of mankind that currently exists, and she lived about, I believe, 200,000 years ago or so, maybe, and we all descend from this one woman. No, see, please go ahead, caller.
How is that possible if Earth is only 2,000 years old?
Well, this would indeed contradict that statement. However, if we were to allow that the statement that the Earth is 2,000 years old, we're using different units, then suddenly all of this becomes reasonable and feasible.
So you think if Adam come, or if we found the remain of Adam or Jesus, do you think we are going to, if we look at, study their DNA or analyze their DNA, do you think they will their DNA will look like us or something?
I think that if it did not look like ours, that it would take a lot of wind out of the sails of any religious person.
I think it would look like ours, but be a little shinier. Well, maybe we a little, also, little glow to that DNA.
We must remember that Adam and Eve did not have belly buttons.
Now, so this I also, I think, is wrong. I think that is taking a very literal view of the picture. But what I'm trying to say is that any person that you have found extraordinary in your lifetime and have taken as an example, just in general, that if you looked at them and found that there was a physical anomaly that was there from birth,
like nipples for men initially.
No, I mean in general. So you found that yes, this person that I took as a paragon for myself, he had an extraordinary amount of some, you know, a hygiene or some particular quality that I cannot have because I was not born that way, that suddenly this person no longer can be an example for me.
Well, I would disagree. I think that anyone can become your paragon, your exemplar, and that's a subjective matter. And I think it's
if they overcome something, it is possible.
Well, I think the tree of life is an undirected tree, so that any node may be the root of this tree. To pick a computer science metaphor.
Well, it may be more difficult to live up to your example, but that does not mean that you cannot find the qualities that you admire in that person.
Well, Aurora, let me... Perhaps I need to be more clear. I mean specifically that, for example, I admire a person for being brave and being brave throughout his life. But then I find that genetically there is a biological anomaly in him that makes him unable to experience fear or pain. Suddenly, my admiration must go down because it is not that he is overcoming fear. He simply does not experience it.
Now comes the question, if the result is the important thing, the results or the actual feelings of the person during the trials and tribulations that they go through, is the important thing what their actions actually are, or how difficult it is for them to produce those actions?
I agree. I see what you are saying. I can still take them as an example. But suppose,
So suppose that I have beautifully lustrous black, raven black hair, which I do, of course, as everyone knows, very thick and luxurious.
Very, very...
If it turned out that I had the genetic predisposition to have such beautiful, luxurious, radiant, jet black hair, then you would no longer admire my hair. But if, on the other hand, I had struggled throughout my life to maintain that hair with Rogaine and blueberries and
Propecia.
Ayurvedic medicine, then you would admire my jet black hair.
I think that there is admiration for the struggle, as Aurora mentions, it is the difficulties that are overcome that are really truly admirable. I think.
Well, I wonder if any of our callers have felt that they were born with some disposition, some genetic material that they had to overcome in their life somehow, and they were able to successfully override through their free will.
I'm not convinced that genetics even exists, really. I haven't even really put much thought past that we're all made of dust.
Well, let's rephrase that then, caller. Have there been any large struggles that within yourself that you have had to work hard to overcome?
Well, there was one time at my current place of employment. I entered the restroom facilities initially thinking that I would have it all to myself, and just as I started to do my business, another gentleman came and sat next to me, well, in the stall next to me, adjacent to me, and his foot made me nervous, but the side of the foot, I had to put it out of my mind, and I was able to complete my task, wipe, flush, wash my hands and leave without a hitch. So I consider that a small...
Oh, see, that is the kind of story that I admire, because...
And now I'm fearless. I can, take a dump anywhere.
And it's overcoming fear.
My mood today has just been uplifted. I am inspired.
But let me ask you all something, because this is an issue that I have been marinating and percolating.
Guys, I have to go. Bye-bye.
Well, thank you very much for being with us, caller. And for anyone else that would like to call in, the number is 617-253-8810. And we would simply be
ecstatic,
overjoyed to have you join us.
Trembling.
But as I was saying, the issue then becomes that if I can identify the quality, you know, simply as a genetic point that makes me lack fear, for example, this is a simple change in my genetics, can I sell this? I mean, given also that I can change unborn children to be the same in that regard, is this a marketable thing? Is it ethical? In practice, perhaps I could, but is it a moral thing?
Perhaps you could sell it to Monsanto, and they can incorporate it into wheat or corn.
So precisely, I mean, the caller mentions this one organization that is selling this sort of thing. But is it an ethical thing?
Well, I personally am a very strong proponent of human genetic engineering. And I think, you know, humans have lived on this earth for hundreds of thousands of years. We've had civilization for 4,000 years or so. And things get a little boring at a certain point. We've sort of gone through the same stuff over and over. And I think it's time to change our essence, to just throw some random genetic material in there. Well, change the way we view things, change the way we experience life.
In terms of the morality, though, do you really think it's any different morality than actually selling food, sustenance? So that's those who do not have means must die. Is that any different?
I'm not sure. I mean, clearly, so we, you know, taking that comparison, the question again would become, I have discovered through my own genius a method for producing corn on land which is not arable. Is it now immoral for me to share this with a country, this knowledge with a people who live on unarable land so that they might also be able to eat?
It would certainly be nice of you to do that.
Precisely, but is it immoral?
Immoral to share the knowledge?
To not share.
To not share the knowledge.
To keep it to myself as my own invention. Or to force them to become my subjects in order to have the information, hence sparing them death, but perhaps denying them of freedom or some less basic quality.
Well, I think in New Age philosophy, we don't really believe in morality. Things just are.
I must disagree with you there. Morality itself is definitely an existing entity. The ideas that compose right or wrong. But I think what you mean to say is we do not believe in one morality, in a single truth that says this is right and this is wrong. But that does not mean we cannot discuss our own personal ideas and explore our own spiritualities.
Have you ever talked to somebody in the stall next to you?
Of course, several times. I mean, especially, that's one location where sounds can tell you so much about a person.
Seems like a very honest, moral, well, you could form, excuse me, a lot of honest discussion in that setting.
Well, definitely, and a lot of people feel it very liberating, because we go back to a time when all of us used to defecate together as a group.
Right.
In the forest and have fun conversations and also
and make various observations or philosophical statements relating or unrelating to the various.
I mean, I think in the case of the anonymous office bathroom, the issue for me is whether the shoes being worn by the person next to me are recognizable or not. If they're
right.
Recognizable, then
So you would maintain a temporary random connection.
Well, it's funny that you mention that because, you know, for several weeks after that event, I would, walk around the office just cataloging people's shoes. You know, I wanted to make sure I knew who I was dealing with next time. Even though, like, I overcame my fear, I still held in my mind, you know, okay, those are the black shoes. I know that's Greg or something. And so if a different sound, you know, that surprised me, came out of the adjacent stall, I would know to put a face to it.
Now, cataloging shoes is challenging because many people do have many shoes. But also, I can see the appeal because having myself failed to use mirrors and other optical devices in the restroom without suffering severe,
agoraphobia.
Well, at least criticism from others for having mirrors and cameras there. I can understand the reasoning for cataloging shoes or socks.
I did read about this South Korean man who, so apparently in South Korea and in Korea in general, the tradition is that when one goes to a funeral to pay respects, one dresses very nicely, wearing their finest clothing, their finest shoes. But nevertheless, before one enters the funeral parlor, one takes off the shoes at the entrance and leaves them there. And so this one man had hit upon this scheme where he would go to random people's funerals, dressed, wearing very cheap shoes. And then on his way out, he would take a very expensive pair of shoes that belonged to someone else. And apparently he amassed thousands and thousands of pairs of shoes that were stored in a vast warehouse. And the police eventually caught him and they found this vast warehouse of expensive shoes.
That's brilliant.
Yeah.
Frankly. I mean, I wonder what would happen if I tried to remove my neighbor's shoes during such an event, you know, as the office ritual. Might not be appropriate. I guess the cultural custom is such that you leave your shoes on pretty much everywhere except your own house, right?
Leave your shoes on. Well, let's let someone else into our house also. The number is 617-253-8810, and we'd love to have you join us. Caller, marhaban. Caller?
Marhaba.
Welcome, caller. Marhaban.
Hi. I've been listening, and to all the shivering and trembling and DNA and shoes and stuff. It's a very nice show tonight.
Well, caller, it is only made more nice by having your voice be there with us.
Thank you. I wanted to tell the Mystic Jew that I tried to get the movie we were talking about a couple of weeks ago in the realm of the unreal.
Right, yeah.
And I've got it coming at the library, so I'm looking forward to watching it maybe the first of the week. I did some reading up on it. It was kind of interesting. And I'll see the artwork involved, which will be fun. But I'm sorry, that's a diversion from your...
Well, that's fine. We welcome diversions and perambulations and peripatations.
And also, I mean, just mixtures. I mean, it instantly comes to mind that, other material may be stolen. And so this film that you are about to watch, also others have handled the film. And I wonder if genetic material could be acquired from the film. And if so, could you use it to, for example, modify a child?
Well, and that brings another question in, which is, if you can concentrate your spiritual energy on certain parts of your own DNA, can you change it?
Can you actually affect random mutations through
There's
the power of
thought? There's always room for change.
Well, what was that?
Change.
What was the research done where... since, you know, we are primarily composed of water, I remember reading this somewhere that I think it was a Japanese researcher placed characters next to glasses of water that represented different emotions like hate or love. And when the water was frozen with those particular characters next to it, the ones that have more benevolent characters form beautiful patterns in the crystal structure, whereas words like hate or, you know, death formed jagged. And
Yeah, I was actually involved in that research. I was
one
of the collaborators.
So.
Yeah.
Well, were the glasses half empty or half full?
And perhaps the answer is, if it's a happy glass, then it's half full, and if it's a sad glass, then it's half empty.
I think that was the overall point of that research, was really just to identify that.
Well, also, and if you, I believe they also screamed at certain cups and yelled names at them and called them stupid, and the other cups they nurtured and said, you will do fine, you will form beautiful crystals.
Like styrofoam cups.
Yeah, that's right.
I wonder what the protocols of the experiment were, because it seems to me that if it were a blind experiment, if it were truly that only the cubs knew what character they stood next to until the data were analyzed, that this would be an interesting finding. But if instead the person pouring the water into an ice tray knew that this is hate water, And you know, even if it was only subconscious that the result were unusual in some way, this would hardly be surprising.
Well, we actually controlled for that by we just blinded with hot iron rods all the collaborators in the experiment, all the graduate students, so they couldn't even see where they were pouring at all.
Well, and also your primary investigator Masaru Emoto. He was also performing some of the experiments himself after those blinded students taped certain water words to the water cups, and he wasn't.
I would imagine he would be angry, having been blinded with hot pokers.
Well, I believe this research was done in Japan. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah.
Well, I think it would take the whole experiment to be blinded.
Well, caller number three. I'm sorry, I forget your name. I know you told me a few weeks ago.
Carol.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Carol, was it? Or
Carol.
Carol.
C-A-R-O-L.
Yeah, so Carol, I wonder if you yourself have overcome some genetic predisposition in your life, some challenge that you were born with.
Just my hump.
Your hump?
Mm.
Ah.
Most people don't mention it. Yes, but I've overcome it.
Is that a verb or a noun? I'm sorry.
A noun.
No, I think that also language can be such an interesting thing, because I've always called a hump a crest when I've noticed that.
Which sounds beautiful, actually.
Which sounds far more appealing.
Or a fin, perhaps.
A fin.
I find it strange how negatively we view such beautiful features, some beautiful independent features. I myself have a tiny hump, and it gives you a new shape, a new resonance, and your voice feels new because of this hump. And that's why I've always sort of told people, don't get surgery to reduce or to change the way that you were born, because it'll change your resonances. Your voice will not be you anymore.
Yeah, but I don't think I'll do anything about it.
I have heard that those with buck teeth are able to sing in a very wondrous way, because the vocal chambers are enlarged and become especially resonant. And I've always had I've always been attracted to women with buck teeth. I don't know why. I think we've talked about Bugs Bunny on previous episodes and how I always admired him as a child, and somehow I may have transferred that admiration to my standards
of... You mentioned Bugs Bunny before.
Yes, yes.
And I do wonder if, again, you know, was your admiration, or supposing that the admiration that you had for Bugs was due to his extremely large teeth, and that it was associated with your struggle to grow teeth, and how he admirably had conquered that struggle, only to find that it was due to solely a cartoon but yet inborn genetic disposition.
Well, I think it's because he's a rabbit.
Precisely, it is a genetic disposition. It is.
I always went for his ears. I'm attracted to them.
The bunny ears.
Yes. Very attractive.
Well, I've always wondered what it would be like to have larger ears, larger, more sensitive ears. And it's sad to me that we've evolved our ears to be shrunken.
I've always thought that the reason the ears were so large was because they were so much less sensitive because of the fur. So they had to be much larger.
In bunnies.
Whereas we have, I mean, I'm gradually growing more fur in my ear, which I've been told by some rustles as it grows. But just the same, most of us have very little ear hair, and the result is that we have very keen, very precise, accurate, beautiful hearing, hence our appreciation for violin music.
Do you also have facial hair?
I do.
You do?
I do. And
You can sometimes hear it rustling against the microphone.
In the case of Dr. Jalas, the question is not whether he has facial hair, but whether there's any part of his face which is visible at all.
Or indeed, not whether I have body hair, but is there a place in my body which has no hair?
Or is there skin underneath the hair?
So he's very hirsute.
Hirsute, yes.
Well, I've heard that you can actually move hair from parts of your body to other parts. And
right, using magnets, I think.
I heard magnets. Of a man bald, and he grew his eyebrows down really, really long, and then he combed them back. Worked for him.
To sort of hide his bald spot, perhaps?
It's amazing what people will do.
And it's amazing what eyebrows can do, honestly.
But again, back to this moral issue, because I really feel, and I hate to bring the discussion back, but I really feel it is unresolved or even unapproached. If I found that there was a gene for baldness, could I sell this gene to a group of people that felt that it was an attractive quality?
I think it'd be nice if you randomly injected it in newborns. Just, you could perhaps go to hospitals.
I think it would be difficult to carry it out without the cooperation of the parents.
Well, you could perhaps bribe the nurses.
Well, I mean, I've heard recently that you can actually copyright a gene. However, I don't know how you could deliver it necessarily.
You can copyright
a
gene?
Was it copyright or is it patent?
Sorry?
Is it a patent or a copyright?
Well, both are the same. So it doesn't matter.
They're a little different, actually. I believe a copyright is something that you produce. So copyright is for some piece of art or literary creation, which you then have exclusive rights for 50 years after your death. Your entire lifetime, in fact. Whereas a patent is a discovery of something, a discovery of some process or some method for doing something or some invention.
Okay.
And that gives you exclusive marketing rights for seven years.
You're a font of information.
And a regular font as well. Calibri.
We do not necessarily.
Maybe you could put it in
a
fountain. You know, hook up the gene through a water supply, like a little local water supply. When people get thirsty, I mean, you need water to stay alive.
Oh, well.
For gene therapy or?
For passing on a patented, copyrighted baldness.
In my new age view of the future, which I advocate, I think we'd all have access to all kinds of genetic modifications. And I think,
like a vending machine?
Like a vending machine. So you go, you put in a quarter, and you get...
More like a library, I think.
Well, simply you'd free in your vision.
Precisely. No, I mean, you know, you'd go to the library, and you would pull out instructions for modifying yourself in a number of ways, And then also, if you'd like to modify your friends, or, you know, however it may be.
And for those who are less hand-on, they can hire someone to modify their genetics.
Yeah, I think we're at the stage of humanity where we need to change things up a little and make them interesting. We need to.
Yeah, like have a teriyaki shop on the East Coast.
You know what I'd like to do? You know what I like to do sometimes
is
talk about movies.
We should do that.
I'd like to know if you saw Pi.
I have seen Pi.
I have eaten Pi.
Oh.
Oh no, this is P-I, Pi, not P-I-E, Pi.
Yes, but I like the...
Pi is excellent.
Which had mystical Jewish themes in it.
Yes, black and white, very cool. Did you see Serious Man?
I have not seen that yet. It is on my queue, as those members of Netflix say.
I have not even heard of Serious Man.
I have never even met a Serious Man.
Well, I'm certainly not a Serious Man myself, but this is a movie directed by the Coen brothers.
Yes, I like to see all their movies. Yeah. Well,
you know what's a wonderful movie is Happiness.
Happiness? No, I don't know about it.
The general sensation?
It's a general sensation.
Yeah, it's a feeling, it's a state, and it's also a wonderful movie.
Oh, I'll have to check it out.
Well, callers, if you don't mind my asking, what do you gain from these movies spiritually? How do they allow you to understand yourselves better?
I found my inner John Lovitz when I watched Happiness.
Inner John what? I don't know him. I learned something, I guess. I learned something from movies. Usually several things. I just watched a hilarious movie called Very Annie Mary. It was very funny.
Very Annie Mary.
Yeah. Very Annie Mary. I can see you're speechless about that.
Yeah, I'm not sure what...
I like to envision my own life as a movie in which I am the central protagonist. And
star.
I wonder if there are many out there who envision themselves as the antagonists in their own movie.
Well, that's what I was thinking. Some days I play the part of the villain, and other days I play the part of the hero, and I don't really know how this movie will end, except, of course, in my death.
Speaking of that, and combining what we were talking about earlier, is Deckard a replicant?
Well, caller, I'm not sure what that means, but callers both, unfortunately, we are just reaching the end of the hour.
Good night.
Thank you so much, both, for being with us.
Thank you.
Thanks also, Aurora.
Thank you for having me. Namaste.
And thanks again to Professor Levine.
Thank you. Shukran.
Afwan, really, Professor Levine, and thank you also. I am Dr. Jalis Sakran here on Music for Human, Human Music, New Age Radio, with an emphasis on you. We are here every Friday at 7, trying to copyright your genes on WMBR Cambridge. Stay tuned for Acts Beyond Words. My Sarama.
points for safety.
Number one.
Cars and bikes stop at red lights.
It's against the law for car drivers or bicycle riders to ignore traffic signals.
So don't buzz through red lights. There might be a pedestrian or turning car that doesn't see you coming.
Number two.
Look first before you open your door.
Numerous bicyclists have been injured or even killed by car doors suddenly opening into them.
Look first, and bicyclists, stay out of the door zone.
Number three.
Cross with the signal.
You are safest if you wait for a walk or green traffic signal.
Don't jaywalk. That's just walking into trouble.
Number four.
Cars and bikes should stop for pedestrians and unsignalized crosswalks.
Be nice. Be legal. Be safe.
Brought to you as a public service by the Cambridge Bicycle Committee and this station.